If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes, episode number 42. And I know that Bam Bam Bigelow has been making his way around Scotland with the beasts from the east, but somehow my internet has remained intact. There is legitimately 3 feet of snow outside my front door.
Really? Wow, that's amazing. Because I was going to ask you about the weather, Kenny, but we're obviously, as Brits, we are fond of talking about the weather, but I mean, we've got a reason to talk about it this week.
Yeah, it's mental. I mean, the thing that's weird is that, so my mum called me and she was just like, oh, you know, the weather, you know, have you been to the shops yet? And I was like, I don't need to go to the shops, I've got stuff. She was like, you never know when they're going to run out of stuff. So she panicked me and had to go to Tesco. I didn't even need to go. So I went down and I ended up getting like a tin of spaghetti and some bin bags, like a fucking mentalist.
I was downtown before, and I tell you, near where I live, there's a chip shop, and There was a massive iron brew truck outside making the deliveries. As you know, Kenny, Iron Brew's motto is, the brew must get through.
And that's it. You will not see Iron Brew failing anywhere, even in England.
Exactly. Even in these bitterly cold conditions, when there's jackknife trucks everywhere, misery galore, the brew got through to our local chippy.
Now, did you hear about there's the beasts from the east, but I think one of the new things is a storm called Tennille, or there's like a Tennille snowstorm or something. So, basically, these have obviously stopped people, because I don't know if you do you know how bad it is in Scotland right now. Like, people aren't even able to go to work.
Well, I mean, I've seen it on the news. I mean, sometimes, you know, you get these. With the weather, it's like there's a lot of people catastrophizing and making it out to be worse than it is. So, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how bad it is. So why don't you tell me, apart from 3 feet of snow outside your front door?
Well, so you've been to my house, Finn. So when you come round the back, which is where the front door to my house is, you know, obviously nobody really goes past there. So I walked out and it's just, you know, 3 feet of snow. Apparently, like, on the motorway beside Glasgow, the M80, apparently there was people stranded overnight.
Wow.
The other day. But it makes me laugh. I mean, it is bad, and you know, you shouldn't really go out unless you need to, because it's quite dangerous and stuff. But the way people are behaving is like, imagine there was an actual problem. You know, it's some snow, and then you get the day off. What, like, so yesterday was a red weather warning, which apparently is the worst one that you can get. So
that's right.
Nobody was at work yesterday. Nobody was. You know, I think a lot of shops were shut because the staff couldn't get in. And Glasgow was a bit like a ghost town, so it's been pretty weird, but it's supposed to, I think the weather warning is supposed to stop today, so everything should get back to normal soon. I was actually supposed to go down to London on Tuesday to the WrestleTalk studios to have some stuff going on down there, and I got to the airport on Tuesday morning and said to the woman, oh, you know, is everything okay in my flight? And she was like, yeah, that's fine, 9:40, and she said, when is it you're coming back? I said, oh, I'm on a flight tonight at 9 o'clock. And she gave me this look that was really unsettling, which basically the look was, don't you dare fucking go down there if you want to get back tonight. So I go over to the customer service desk and she moves all my flights to next week. So it's been... I do love the snowstorm has to be called after, I assume, one of this year's WWE Hall of Fame inductees, Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yes.
But I do want to say, to open the show, great news. We have added a new tier on Patreon, which is basically going to be all things Finn Martin. Because if you're a $3 pledger, you obviously get the Power Slam podcast early. But we've now created a $4 level, $1 more than what you were paying before, if you want to go up to it. And that means you get the Power Slam overrun on there every single week. We are going to endeavour that every single week there is one, even if my friend spills vodka on my laptop. I'll just make sure that whenever I get an overrun, that I've fixed it and put it up before anything happens to my laptop. Also, we'll do a bonus podcast, or maybe more, every month, where we'll talk about an event or a topic or something that's on our mind. But most importantly, and the biggest thing is, Finn's going to be writing at least two pieces a month for the site, where you can go to Patreon, you'll be able to read this article, you won't be able to read it anywhere else, not on WrestleTalk, not on finlaymartin.co.uk. So, Finn, you are giving us some exclusive writings, and I believe that mentioning Bam Bam Bigelow in the Hall of Fame might segue us beautifully into your first article.
Yeah, I mean, Bam Bam Bigelow is a guy. I mean, Bam Bam Bigelow, he's not in the WWE Hall of Fame, is he?
No, but the heavy rumour is that he is the one going in this year as the sort of posthumous inductee. You know, last year we had Rick Rude. Before that we had Big Boss Man, I think it was. Then the year before it was Randy Savage. So, yeah, it appears to be, you know, one kind of deceased person, and Bam Bam's the pick this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's definitely deserving of it. I mean, he was a huge star. I mean, he didn't do as well in WWF as a lot of people would have liked, but, I mean, he had a terrific career in so many different promotions. So he's somebody that I would certainly endorse his induction in the Hall of Fame. But, yeah, I'm going to be doing some writing for the site, doing a piece on the people that I think should be in the Hall of Fame and my reasons for it, more importantly, and also doing, like, a wrestling roundup, kind of a bit like what's going down in the old Power Slam magazine, where just like news items and comments and things like that, and my opinions on certain things that we don't cover on the Power Slam podcast. So yeah, I've already made a start on it, and I will be submitting it to you, Kenny, tomorrow on the Friday. So that'll be the day that this goes up on the main feed, Patreon.
Yeah. I know. So you're, if you're listening to this on Patreon right now, it's Thursday, because we're putting it up here, but then if you're listening to this in the main feed, it's Friday, which means that today's the day the article goes up. And yes, for anyone who is imagining, I did have the biggest fangirl moment in the world when I heard that Finn was going to be kind of resurrecting what's going down for Patreon, so I'm going to be waiting with bated breath to read that. So, and also, I think we should just clear up that the reason Finn did this is because he is still raging that Ivory's going to the Hall of Fame. So
that's right. Yeah, it was that, and inspired, of course, by Bret Hart's suggestion that Jim Neidhart should go in the Hall of Fame as a member of the Hart Foundation. You know, that was,
it's so selfless of Bret to just, because, you know, the thing is, Bret said that Jim Neville Neidhart should go in, and I mean, that means that Bret would have to go in again, and he's that selfless that he's willing to go in a second time. It's just, he's so selfless sometimes.
Just an all-round good egg.
The thing is,
anyway, Kenny, let's get on with this week's news. There's all sorts has happened this
week. Before we get into that, I want to just bring something up here. You know, you're a man who wrote, you know, basically the UK wrestling Bible for over 20 years. But last week, you were talking about Mr. T getting into the Hall of Fame, and you got the year wrong.
Got the year wrong, Kenny.
I mean, how do you plan to pick up the pieces of your editorial career?
I don't know. I mean, there's no room for inexactitude on this podcast. You know, I mean, I did my, you know, each week I'll do the Power Slam podcast post-mortem. You know, where did I go wrong? What should I have said? What should I have said? What shouldn't I have said? And at that there, I couldn't sleep, Kenny. I was just beside myself, beating myself up. I was just embarrassed. You know, so I'd just like to apologize for that blunder and just say, yes, that Mr. T went into the Hall of Fame in 2014, how could I forget that speech? How could I get the year wrong, Kenny? You know, I'm never going to live it down. It's that simple.
I mean, I'm going to give you a bit of credit here. I think what happened was that you, like everybody else, tried to erase that speech from memory. And in just kind of, you know, the kerfuffle of erasing it, you got, you know, you kind of erased the year. So any sort of like WrestleMania weekend 2014 knowledge, Finn's probably not going to get right because he's tried to erase it. So just don't give him a hard time, folks. You'll get there.
We just need to. You know, I've apologised now, Kenny. We just need to move on. It's too hurtful for me to talk about it anymore.
I tell you what would be more hurtful: watching that fucking speech again. So let's talk about the big thing that people want us to talk about. It's everywhere on the internet, and it is the rumours regarding John Cena's match at WrestleMania this year, because what happened was, obviously on Monday, which we'll get to when we talk about Raw a little bit, John Cena cut the promo, challenging The Undertaker. People went... I mean, would you say it's fair to say biggest pop of the night for that potential announcement?
I would say so, yes.
So we've got that, and that's all very well and good. And, you know, everybody's kind of, you know, expecting that, you know, John Cena's going to go to SmackDown.
He's going to... Hopes were raised only to be dashed.
Dashed the following day, because... So that was the Monday night, and then Tuesday he was going to go to SmackDown, and we figured he was going to try and find some way to get into WrestleMania, the big lech that he is, and that was going to be that. And then on Tuesday night, Justin, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Justin Barrasso, I think it is?
Yes, from Sports Illustrated, yeah?
Who's a journalist in Sports Illustrated, put out a tweet that said, breaking, per WWE sources, Rey Mysterio is backstage working out details tonight at SmackDown for a match at WrestleMania. The rumoured opponent is John Cena. And, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, you're putting something out there in the ether that is potentially going to change the whole landscape of WrestleMania. And I read about it. So I was up late that night, and I read about it at about 2:30 in the morning. And yeah. It was one of those, I was like, for fuck's sake, there's going to be no way to confirm it or whatever. So then the next day, Mike Johnson from PW Insider released a report where he sort of had his stake in what was going on. So he said that, you know, there's been rumours for the last several days that Mysterio would be facing John Cena at WrestleMania. While we've heard these rumours over the last 48 hours, we cannot confirm this, but we wanted to mention it because of the amount of emails we got. And then he mentioned the Justin Barrasso article and said, you know, Justin had said that Rey Mysterio was at last night's SmackDown tapings in LA to negotiate a new deal, but he was in fact not backstage at SmackDown. He wasn't in LA that night. He was at the house show in San Diego on Monday night. So, but everybody who was, you know, involved with the company were Anaheim for Raw.
Of course.
If you still follow this, folks. I know it's a bit confusing. But So, and then he goes on to say, you know, Ray's appearance at Royal Rumble's a one-night deal, but, you know, Triple H is working with him to try and make a deal. And, you know, that makes sense, because Triple H has been kind of, you know, the guy to smooth everything over. And then the kind of, the final kind of, I guess, you know, way to see what's happening is Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer newsletter was going to come out. So, you know, would he back up Justin Barrasso's claims of this Rey Mysterio match, or would he kind of say with Mike Johnson
blow it to pieces?
Exactly. So what he did was he Brian Alvarez earlier on the day had done the Wrestling Observer Live radio show, and he was laughing at the notion of Rey Mysterio versus John Cena because he said, you know, I think they had like a live text thing where you can text in a question. And he said all they had were questions about Rey Mysterio and John Cena and blah, 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 blah. And Meltzer basically said that at the moment it is still Undertaker John Cena. There has been no change. The only way there would be a change is if the Undertaker got injured or if he chose to, you know, eliminate himself. But at the moment, it is still Undertaker John Cena. When Andy was asking me about it, the thing for me was I would just be amazed if WWE would have allowed Cena to tease that match on Raw if it's not being delivered. It would just be...
Absolutely right.
Insanity. But what did you make of the whole thing? Because it did really create a big stir online. And I think as well, there's a lot of people that I was talking to who were not that excited about an Undertaker return. But then when the match was mentioned and the crowd went into a frenzy, that it kind of got them in the mood for maybe seeing it to potentially the next day having that dashed, and then, you know, Rey Mysterio and Cena would be such a random match out of nowhere, wouldn't really fit the story they're trying to tell. What did you make of the whole thing?
Well, the Rey Mysterio thing just seems like a red herring to me, almost like remember the Jinder Mahal press release last year, in which he was described as a two-time champ? Do you remember that?
I do. I've still got heart palpitations thinking about it.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, the Mysterio thing just feels to me like, why would that match happen? I mean, there's no reason for that match to happen. They did have a match back in 2011. I think it was the night after the night after Money in the Bank.
Oh, was that the final of the tournament thing on Raw? Where
that's right, yeah. That's right. I remember the match. Cena almost killed Mysterio with a completely botched powerbomb. I vividly remember that. So it was not much of a match. I can't think of a single reason why those two would be matched up at WrestleMania. What would be the story behind it? What would be the purpose of the match? It would almost be like giving Cena something to do. And Cena's become, apart from Ronda, even more than Ronda Rousey, has become the number one act in all the WWE right now. He's just taken over this week. So, I mean, there's no way after all that they're going to pit him against Rey Mysterio. It's just not going to happen. And as you just said, Kenny, there's no way they would have teased a match with The Undertaker if that match wasn't going to happen.
Well, remember that, I think it was about a year ago. When would it have been? No, it would have been late 2015. Do you remember Paul Heyman was on the Stone Cold podcast?
Yes.
And Heyman asked him about doing about a match with Lesnar, and they had this big thing, and Vince was furious about it because they were bigging up a match that they couldn't deliver.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if Vince is that mad that a network show is doing something like that, he's not going to have one of his top guys come out on Raw and tease you with an Undertaker match if it's not going to happen.
Absolutely right, yeah. To imagine that, I mean, it's just nonsensical. You know, of course, I mean, I said that Undertaker was going to come out on the post-Elimination Chamber Raw, but I didn't anticipate what was going to happen this week. So they're just spinning it all out a bit more. So I don't know exactly when we're going to have the Undertaker turning up to confront John Cena, possibly the night after Fastlane.
I assume it's going to be the TV after Fastlane.
Yeah, but there's no way Mysterio and Cena are wrestling at the WrestleMania event. It's just no way those two are clashing there. It would just be such a disappointment, especially after the tease, especially after the rumours, and because there's no reason for a match like that to happen.
I find the most interesting is when Barrasso had put the article up, you know on Twitter that you can pin your tweet?
Yes.
Which means it stays at the top of your timeline all the time. He pinned that tweet, and it's still pinned to this very moment right now, which says to me one of two things. Either he's committing to this story, or which to me is baffling, because if numerous other people have said categorically Rey Mysterio was not backstage, I would be wanting to unpin that pretty soon, because then it just kind of shows that my sources were wrong. But what I find quite interesting about it, maybe it's just me that finds it interesting and it's not really, but so Barrasso writes for Sports Illustrated, which is supposed to be this, you know, major publication. But
they've got the relationship with WWE.
But they've got the relationship with WWE. So it's this thing of, you know, they can't really break Meltzer or Johnson or whatever kind of stories because they're in too deep.
Exactly.
So then it becomes, was Barrasso told to put this out there to get people off the scent?
Yeah, they're just part of the hype machine. This is just part of the hype machine. It's almost like...
But that then to me... I don't really read Sports Illustrated stuff on wrestling, because it kind of... The whole, you know, Sports Illustrated and ESPN writing on WWE stuff, I'd be as soon just to go to WWE.com and read it at that point, you know. So... But if I was following Barrasso's stuff and I was reading his stuff, this would make me kind of go, oh, this was your big scoop, and it was completely wrong.
Yeah, you can dissect that and try and make sense out of that. I would rather not dwell on it. As far as I'm concerned, it's just part of the hype. They're part of the hype machine, Sports Illustrated are. They get fed stuff. I don't know what his motive is for doing this. All I'm saying is that I don't believe that match is going to happen, Mysterio versus Cena, because it makes no sense to me at all. And they've teased Cena versus Undertaker. That has to happen, because there's no way Cena is winning the title at Fastlane. So they've laid the foundations for Cena Undertaker, and anything else just will not do at that show. Sorry, Kenny.
No, I don't know if you can think of one off the top of your head, and I'm kind of throwing this out of left field. When you were doing the Power Slam hotline back in the 90s, and yes, you know, that was a big moneymaker for you, and it was the way for people to kind of get up-to-date news, because obviously the magazine's once a month. Did you ever have any experience where you were fed something that was quite big, but you maybe just didn't feel comfortable putting it out there because your name behind it would carry a bit of gravitas, and you didn't really want You know, was like a process that you had of like, okay, I've got this source and they've told me this, but then I've got these other two sources are saying it's not true, so I'm just not going to bother reporting it right now just in case. Like, did that kind of thing ever come up?
I tell you one, right, very, very early, this was in the Superstars of Wrestling days, we were told that Yokozuna was going to win the 1993 Royal Rumble. I didn't believe it because he hadn't been there long enough. And I just thought, this guy's not really getting over.
Uh-huh.
And somebody I know said, he's absolutely winning that match. You've got to put it on the hotline. I was like, he's not winning the match. There's no way it makes no sense.
And maybe time frame, when would this have been? December 92? Or would it be end of the January?
This was just before the show. So it's January of 1993. So it was just before the show.
Uh-huh.
But we'd heard that Yokozuna was winning that match. So we used to do predictions and things like that as well. And back then it was... You know, it's a big thing to get predictions right. Now, it doesn't really matter to me whether I get my predictions right or it doesn't. I mean, of course you want to, but it's not really that much of a big deal if you don't. And in some ways, it's nice to be wrong because it shows that wrestling can still surprise you. But back then, it seemed to be a huge thing about making these predictions and getting them right. And yeah, we'd heard that Yokozuna was winning the Rumble 93. I didn't believe it. And I was told... Finley, just put that out there. He's winning the match. And he did win the match. And I remember being, wow, you know, I remember being so surprised by this. But that was a time when we got a bit of information that I didn't believe that turned out to be true. So things like that did happen. Of course they did. The trick is when you get it wrong, Kenny, I mean, you know, we've got stuff wrong on this podcast. Christ, I just ballsed up the Mr. T Hall of Fame thing. The trick is in any situation is that when you get it wrong, it's a factual thing. When you get it wrong, you need to just hold your hands up and say, yeah, we were wrong. And people respect you a lot more for that because you're not going to get everything right all the time. It's just that simple.
I mean, I don't think that you should be anywhere near as hard on yourself for the Mr. T thing as but it's...
I was just kidding.
I know. But I think it's interesting to me that, you know, in a day and age where journalism's not quite what it used to be in a lot of ways. But, you know, you do have people, like, I'm not going to dwell on this too long because it's just a kind of area of wrestling that I don't really want to get into, but David Bixenspan, I'm really fascinated by some of his kind of investigative stuff that he does. You know, he did an article a couple of weeks ago on Jerry Lawler where he had actually contacted the... Remember the 1993 case where Lawler was suspended?
Yes, I do.
That David Bixenspan found... got the court documents and was able to actually see and sort of print out a letter that Lawler had written to the prosecution kind of denouncing the victims and stuff. And that kind of stuff is like, you know, that's a lot of work and journalism that you're putting into that. So it's hard. It's sometimes when you get somebody who comes out and says something that's so blatantly not there, but yet it's still pinned to this day. It's just sad. But I do want to ask you,
We'll see where he goes. You know, we'll see what his game is here. Maybe there's a purpose to this that we can't see yet, Kenny.
Yeah. Or, you know, and maybe in 2 weeks he's right. And, you know, he was ahead of the curve.
Yeah, maybe so. And, you know, if he is right, you know, then I will absolutely, you know, give him huge props for being right. But I just can't see that match happening.
So
I can't see Cena and Mysterio happening at WrestleMania.
Now, who,
just get it?
Who did you think was going to win the 1993 Royal Rumble?
I can't remember. Maybe Randy Savage?
Yeah,
I can't remember. Well, he was obviously the guy that Yokozuna eliminated, wasn't he?
Yeah, the final two. When Savage, you know, Randy Savage, one of the smartest wrestlers on planet Earth, and I still think this spot is ridiculous to this day, where Savage hits the top rope elbow in a Royal Rumble match and then goes to pin Yokozuna, and Yokozuna just flings him over the top rope from the ground. Oh my God.
I can't remember who I thought was going to win. Randy Savage. I don't know.
I think Savage would probably have been the only other person who could have won because that Royal Rumble was fucking dreadful. I mean,
what, that the Royal Rumble match?
The Royal Rumble match, yeah.
Because the undercard was really good, wasn't it? But the match was not very good at all.
Yeah, because like
I think Randy Savage versus Bret Hart would have been a hell of a main event.
Yeah, no, it's always kind of fascinating to me. If you look at, you know, a lot of people talk about the 1992 Royal Rumble and how that's kind of, you know, one of the best. Let me just, I'm pulling this up just because I think it's... So in the 1992 Royal Rumble, let me just read some of the names to you who are in this Royal Rumble match, right? You've got the British Bulldog, the Million Dollar Man, Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, the Texas Tornado, Big Boss Man, Roddy Piper, Jake Roberts, Jim Duggan, Jimmy Snuka, The Undertaker, Randy Savage, Rick Martel, Hulk Hogan, Sid Justice, Sergeant Slaughter. Names. And then you cut to 1 year later at the 1993 Royal Rumble. And the names in this one are Ric Flair, Bob Backlund, Papa Shango, The Nasty Boys, Virgil, Max Moon, Coco Beware, The Berserker, Terry Taylor, Damian Demento, Tatanka, Typhoon, The Headshrinkers, Carlos Colon, The Repo Man, Randy Savage and Yokozuna.
Yeah. Yeah, not too many contenders for why was I so opposed to the idea of Yokozuna winning? In hindsight, it makes no sense at all, does it?
Well, maybe you just thought it was Skinner's time to shine.
Well, maybe you did tell me. Oh, your Repo Man was going to walk away with it.
So let's talk about this week in wrestling, all the stuff that's been going on. I guess the first thing I wanted to get your take on is the Brock Lesnar situation. You know, Brock Lesnar advertised to be on Raw. Actually, no, but first of all, talk about the Elimination Chamber. I forgot we got to talk about that. What do you think of the Elimination Chamber card overall, and what were the highlights?
I think the Elimination Chamber, Kenny, I think I correctly predicted all the results. I think I did. If I'm wrong about that, I apologise. I think I got them all right.
And you did? You did. You got everyone.
I was actually slightly disappointed by that. So I was hoping that there would be some surprises. I mean, I enjoyed the show overall. I enjoyed the Women's Elimination Chamber match. I thought that was very well put together. It did amuse me that Mandy Rose was eliminated just before Mickey James entered the chamber. That did amuse me, Kenny.
Maybe they listened last week and they realised, well, wait a minute, Finn basically said that Trish and Jackie Gayda was slightly better, so we need to avoid them being together.
No, Trish and Jackie Gayda was worse, but only marginally. And I thought Mandy Rose did redeem herself in the chamber match, so good for her. I thought overall I enjoyed it. There were some spots in there, like some problems with the selling, but that's just sort of like a company-wide problem right now. I mean, the most obvious one was when Alexa Bliss nailed Sasha Banks with Twisted Bliss from the top of one of the pods, and Banks basically no-sold it and turned it into a bank statement. I was just like, what's this? I mean, that was like, you know,
do you think that was deliberately? Because some of the rumors were that maybe Alexa was supposed to miss or something. Or do you think that spot was intended for kind of Super Sasha?
Well, you would have thought doing a move like that. I mean, I know they had the mats for the first year. They had the mats there instead of them landing on the metal.
Well, I think they had the mats in the men's one last year when they brought it back and they brought the new format together. So I think they brought. I could be wrong on that, but because I'm sure I remember last year people going, it doesn't look as good. And people were like, oh no, the wrestlers don't get as injured. Poor you.
Yeah, you could well be right about it. You could well be right about that, Kenny. I mean, it's possible that she was supposed to miss and with her landing on the mat, she wouldn't have hurt herself. But still, that's a big thing for her to miss. So you would have thought that she would be, you know, would be booked for her to land on a person to cushion the fall. But either way, Sasha should have been able to improvise and should not have immediately turned that into the bank statement. I know everything's laid out move for move and, you know, they're all just going through, you know, the script and, you know, deviation from the script is forbidden. But that should have been a time when she should have had the, you know, she should have had the smarts to say, right, I need to sell this at least for 20 seconds before I do the reversal, because this looks really bad. So that was just one moment that really hit me of someone doing a big move, like a huge move, and it not being sold, which is sort of like a, you know, it's an epidemic in WWE. We all know about that. But occasionally when these things happen, they sort of stand out, and that was one of them. But I mean, overall, I enjoyed the Women's Elimination Chamber match. I felt it was really well put together. There was some good story stuff there with Sasha shoving Bayley off the top of what, as Bayley was trying to climb up one of the pods, Sasha put hand out and then heelishly shoved her off. And that was really good. And I think that foreshadowed the Sasha heel turn that we've all been hoping for so many months now. I was kind of hoping we might get an advancement of that storyline on Raw the next night. We didn't do, which was mildly disappointing. But hey, you know, we've still got a candle burning, Kenny, for that heel turn. So I enjoyed that. I felt Alexa Bliss entered a really good performance. And I thought afterwards her sort of phantom babyface turn was really well done. And she's like there saying, you know, she appeared to turn babyface, said that dedicated a win to the fans and all the little girls and the women out there who dared to dream. And then she did the heel turn and said that none of them would ever be able to duplicate what she'd done, and there's only one true goddess in WWE. And I thought that was a really good promo. I thought it was delivered brilliantly. And it was also noticeable to me, Kenny, that when she did the heel turn, she got loads and loads of cheers. I'm sure you noticed that.
Yeah, she even had me hook, line, and sinker. I was going, oh, is she going to be the babyface against Nia? And then right at the end, she twisted it back. It was fantastic.
It was really well done. I like the way as well that the women, when they were eliminated, particularly Sasha Banks, really sold how much this loss meant to them. So I enjoyed that as well. I mean, the next day, these things don't really mean that much, unfortunately. But on the night, I felt that they really made a huge production out of that in a way that was designed to make this match matter. And the match hopefully will be remembered as the first Women's Elimination Chamber match should be. I felt that all the talent did what they were supposed to do. I know you were really impressed by Bayley's performance in there, and you felt that it was a return to form for her.
Yeah, this was the first time that she has felt like a star in a long time. I think, because I think I can't remember when we started doing the Power Slam podcast. Do you remember what month we started doing this?
Was it May? I think it was May of last year.
Yeah, so maybe we just caught it in time. I can't remember if we got a chance to talk about it. I always kind of assume our podcast started in the summer, but anyway, I mean, well, didn't get a fucking summer in Glasgow, so could have been any time. But Bayley and Alexa Bliss was maybe my least favorite program of 2017.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we talked about, didn't we, about the, was it the Extreme Rules match?
Yes.
Yeah, the kendo stick on a pole match?
Yeah, and that was,
that seemed like, that was a real, you know, that was a milestone for Bayley for all the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's funny because Alexa Bliss is someone who, I have been critical of her in-ring work, and I think that's fair, but at the same time, you know, last year, she has a great character. That's the thing, you know, like she's getting better all the time. But last year, you know, I don't know if you remember, but the women's match for SmackDown, remember it was like a championship thing where any woman could be in it or something. And it was like Alexa, Naomi, Mickie James, a couple other people. And it was going to be on the pre-show last year at WrestleMania. And the fans actually, you know, made such a fuss about it that it got put on the main show. So last year, she went into WrestleMania defending the SmackDown women's title. This year, she's going to go in defending the Raw women's title. And I think that she deserves it. I think she deserves to be a woman who's on both those cards in a championship match because she's put more work in than pretty much any other woman on the roster, character-wise. And I think that's what counts in WWE. So, fair play to her. I think she's knocking it out of the park right now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think as a performer in the ring, I think she's pretty good. I think she's more than adequate. I think what she does is she doesn't do too much. And everything she does well. I think she's got a particular style of selling and bumping that's unique to her. And in WWE, that's saying something because so many of the people wrestle the same way. And I think her style and her movements and everything, when she's in there, she brings something different to the match each time. And I think you can tell that she's really conscious that the standards of others are on paper better than the standards. The general standard is better than her, and she's had to step it up. She knows that she needs to improve. She's conscious of that, and she has strived to do that. But she's got a style to me, even, you know, if she's not doing things that are complicated as what other people are doing, I think everything she does it well, and everything she does matters. So, I mean, as a performer, I wouldn't say I can't fault her, because you can always fault, you can fault anyone, basically, if you really want to. But I think she's aware of who she is, what her character is, what she's supposed to do in the ring, and she knows how to carry her performance out, both in the ring and obviously on the mic. You can see, as you said, WWE is very happy with her character. Will entrust her with an opening segment of Raw, which is something that not that many performers get to be in the opening segment of Raw. And Alexa's usually the one on the mic who's carrying it for the rest of the women. So she's in a great spot, win or lose at WrestleMania, and you would think that she's going to lose. She's going to be all right. I think she's going to go from strength to strength this year.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess we're just going to tie it in here. We might talk about Chamber and Raw together at points, but for the women's stuff, I thought Raw this week was absolutely excellent, and we'll get to it in a minute, but I thought the only part of it that I wish they'd done more with was, I wish we got an explanation as to why Mickie James has, you know, now got an allegiance with Alexa Bliss, because they never That's really right. explained that.
Yeah, yeah, she's turned heel without the turn.
It's almost like, remember when Nikki Bella beat Brie, and Brie had to be her servant for 30 days, and then Brie just continued to be her servant forever.
You know,
I wish they'd done more with that. But, and you know, the thing is, on Raw, they did further the Bayley and Sasha thing a little bit by Bayley not tagging in to Sasha Banks.
That's right. Yeah.
And jumping off the apron, and the commentary were very, very careful to put across that this isn't Bayley being, you know, vindictive. This is, you know, how many times is Sasha going to do this to her? She eliminates her from the Royal Rumble, kicks her in the face off a pod at Elimination Chamber. So it's still kind of bubbling it a little bit.
Yeah, what I meant by it was, yeah, Bayley did that kind of as vengeance for what had happened at Elimination Chamber, you know, and that was accepted as her actions were accepted by the fans as Sasha's comeuppance for the way she'd behaved the previous evening. So that was good. What I was talking about more was Sasha. Perhaps there could have been a Sasha Bayley confrontation backstage with Bayley saying, "Well, what was that last night?" You know,
yeah, just time to heat it up a little bit with Sasha.
Yeah, yeah, and then Banks perhaps explaining it, and we didn't get that. We did get some furtherance of it, as you said there in that little scene, but I think it's time right now to really ramp this up and really turn the heat up on this feud, rather than just go in, you know, in baby steps. I think they really need to turn this one up. I want to see more next week. And I'd like there to be a reason as well for this turn. Because when you think about it, Kenny, so often with turns, they don't really give us a reason. And obviously, you know, that's been emphasized and underlined and underscored and italicized by the Mickie James thing, which was actually the turn without a turn. We haven't seen one of those for a while. I imagine Mickie James was standing there thinking, why me?
Weren't we all? Anyway, I think it is. I actually think the idea itself, that I'm making up my own stories here, as David said to me on Tuesday. But you know, the story is there as to why Mickie James would turn on her, because Alexa Bliss is the one that brought her back to WWE, and you know, Mickie has tried to beat her several times and not been successful. So maybe it is just kind of those, you know, if I can't beat them, join them. But let's hear
that's
that.
That's all she had to say, wasn't she? Something like that. That's all she had to say. That would have taken up, what, 30 seconds of the programme?
Yeah, but you know, that you just needed something to do that. But elsewhere in Elimination Chamber, obviously, you know, Asuka defeated Nia Jax, and there was a post-match beatdown from Nia. Tag titles were on the line, and the bar retained over Titus Worldwide. But the main event was the Elimination Chamber match for the men, where it was pretty much the Braun Strowman show.
It was.
What did you make of the main event, and how they, you know, because the question going on is, how are they going to book Braun Strowman? How are they going to get around all this kind of stuff? How did they do in your eyes?
I mean, it was with Braun Strowman, he's their guy, isn't he? He's their guy for after WrestleMania. I'm not quite sure what he's going to do at WrestleMania right now, and that's a big talking point, Kenny, isn't it? No one really knows what Braun's going to do. I think we can safely say he's not going to be in that tag team match with Ronda Rousey. I think we can safely say that.
Yeah, I mean, he's in this weird spot where, you know, it appears that what they're doing is kind of holding them back in case they need him for the main event, you know, because Brock Lesnar, what if something happens with him? Roman Reigns, there's obviously the talk of this, you know, guy that's saying he's going to leak information that Roman had bought steroids and stuff, which if that does happen, they may have to suspend him, and it, it would be his second suspension, which would be 60 days.
Sure.
So, yeah, they kind of need to have Braun there. And then I guess, you know, further to that, if for some reason Kurt Angle can't wrestle, they could put him in there. What my one hope from all this is that... Because the weird thing to me was when Roman wins, that Braun got to do the whole beatdown after the match.
Yes.
That to me was the weird part. But my hope for Braun Strowman is that him sort of being their caretaker for anything that they need doesn't end up with him kind of doing nothing if they don't need him for those two matches.
Well, it could very well lead to that. He could end up getting dumped in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, you know.
For the second year in a row.
Well, yeah, that's right. That could happen, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you asked me what I thought of the men's chamber match. Obviously, Braun eliminated everyone except for Roman Reigns, who, of course, was the winner. As everyone knew, as we predicted, and everyone else predicted. So Braun was presented as you know, he was presented as a Superman in there. He was the guy. But, of course, you couldn't beat Super Reigns. So, I mean, that had been the plan all along, really, to build Braun up so that he could put Reigns over. So Reigns is reheated for Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. So if you look at it in terms of old school booking, Kenny, it does make sense, doesn't it? I mean, we know that Reigns, whether you like it or not, Reigns is Vince's guy. He's facing Lesnar at WrestleMania in 5 weeks on Sunday. And let's face it, you know, you've got to wonder how the bookies are going to handle this one, Kenny, because it seems so damn obvious to me that Reigns is beating Lesnar. So what will be the odds on that match?
I love now that you're obviously making light of it and stuff, but it is funny how that's now a consideration in wrestling. It's like, what are the bookies going to do? You know,
but he's right, isn't it? Because
it's like when they do, I mean, it's to a lesser extent, but it's like when they do, you know, one of these kind of like open challenges. What are you supposed to do? You know, or like if there's a mystery opponent in a match, how are you supposed to predict they're going to win or whatever? But yeah, I really hope that Braun Strowman does not end up in you know, a match with Elias or the Intercontinental title match. I just think that, do you know what? See, even if he goes in that main event and becomes a triple threat, you can still you can still have Reigns pin Lesnar and do the same thing. But people want him in a top match, and I think he deserves to be in one. So I hope he gets it somehow.
Yeah, I hope he does as well. I mean, the thing is, I don't think they're going to do a triple threat match between Reigns and Lesnar. I think that would then cloud the issue, and then also Strowman would be received as the babyface by the fans, and that's not what WWE wants, as evidenced by Reigns' promo on Lesnar this week on Raw. You know, there's a concerted effort going on right now by everyone, the whole machine, to try and get Reigns over as the babyface and Lesnar over as the villain in that match. You add Strowman to that, and it's going to dilute the message that they're wanting to send. So I don't think he's going to be in the top match. This is Reigns' night. Whether people like it or not, he's coming out of there with that title.
Well, let me ask you this then. We're on March the 2nd or 1st? March the 1st as we record this.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you, with 38 days to go until WrestleMania, what is your prediction for what Braun Strowman will be doing at WrestleMania? And we will listen back to this in 38 days and go, did Finn Martin get it right?
I don't know the answer to that, because there does not seem to be an obvious direction for him. I mean, you look at Miz and Rollins. Miz and Rollins, that's all tied up. You would think that Finn Balor's going to be involved in the IC title match as well, based upon what happened on Raw. I can't see them booking Strowman against Elias, even though there was a non-finish in the Strowman versus Elias match on Raw. That was, yeah, because Elias used the fire extinguisher, didn't he?
Yes.
I just can't see that as a WrestleMania match. I just don't see that as a WrestleMania match. But I suppose that would give both of them, because, I mean, they like Elias, we know that. Obviously, they like Strowman because he pinned everyone except for Reigns in the Elimination Chamber match. So we know they like Strowman. So maybe that match gets them both on there. But it doesn't really feel like a WrestleMania caliber match, does it?
No, no.
But if it's not Elias, who's it going to be? I mean, they're either going to book him against... It's hard to believe they're going to book him against someone like Big Show, because they've done that feud, and who really wants to see it anyway? if they put him in the Battle Royal and he wins that, what the hell does that mean? He's just pinned everyone in the chamber match, everyone except for Reigns.
There is one other red herring that could come into play. I don't know if you want to add more people into WrestleMania at this point, because it's stacked as it is, but Samoa Joe is someone who is maybe ready to come back, and you know, Joe as a heel trying to, you know, take down the tree that is Braun Strowman could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is a possibility. I mean, that would feel like, obviously they've been in the ring together before, but that, because Joe's been gone for a while now, that would feel like a fresh match again. And he gets Samoa Joe on the card. Obviously, Braun's going to win that. There's no way that Samoa Joe can win that, but maybe Braun can win it in a way that's not totally decisive and they can do a rematch the next month. So maybe that can work. That would feel like quite a big match, and it's a fresh match as well, which generally WWE likes to present at WrestleMania, or at least matches that haven't happened recently. One thing that you did say last week, Kenny, was that Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy may well wrestle at WrestleMania. And I'm like, no, there's no way that's going to happen. Kind of looks like the feud's continuing.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt on Raw did, you know, mention that, you know, he basically murdered Rhino and Heath Slater because of Matt Hardy. And then Matt Hardy was on Twitter saying that, you know, the only way he'll take on Bray Wyatt again is if it's in his, what was he said, for the completion of the deletion of Abigail, it'll only be on my terms, on my battlefield.
Right.
And he also at one point has said on Twitter that there's going to be the ultimate deletion of Bray Wyatt. So it looks like it may happen.
I think Bray did use the phrase "the Great War" as well, didn't he, on Raw?
He did. The thing that I've realised is the last thing I ever want to see Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt do ever again in my life is have a match in a wrestling ring. Which I know defeats the purpose, but, you know, just send some cameras to the Hardy house, get them to have a couple of lines of coke, and just go crazy with it. See what happens.
The match did just feel like it was filling a space on the card, didn't it? Elimination Chamber.
I think it's because you've got these two characters who are larger than life. I mean, Bray Wyatt sucks any form of excitement out of you, but, you know, Bray Wyatt is all supernatural and all that, and then Matt Hardy's just bonkers, and, you know, Raw's kind of got this, like, overly produced look to it that it just makes them look normal.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. So, I mean, it's, have you ever seen any of Kevin Sullivan's stuff that he did in the old Championship Wrestling from Florida Territory?
I've not. Was he good?
Well, it was when he was doing the satanic stuff.
And I've seen pictures of it, yeah.
Yeah, with like a purple haze, and there was Jake Roberts was involved, and all these other characters, and this long running feud with Dusty Rhodes and Barry Windham. And like you watch it, and it was just like you think, "Wow, this is just so far out there." But it had a sort of in a wrestling context, it had this realism to it that Bray Wyatt versus Matt Hardy doesn't have on the sanitized Raw each week. So I mean, you look at that stuff they were doing back in the early part of the 80s, and contrast that with what's going on between Bray and Matt, and it just feels hollow. It just feels wafer thin. So they can do something at House Hardy. It'll be a pre-tape match, of course. Maybe they can do something that's going to really entertain people. Maybe try and give some sort of explanation in the process as to why Matt Hardy has become woken. We still haven't been given an explanation yet, Kenny.
We have not. Hopefully at some point we'll get that.
We haven't talked about the Ronda Rousey angle.
That's where I was going next. So Ronda,
Ronda
Rousey, contract signed at Elimination Chamber. She comes out. Stephanie and Triple H are in the ring with Kurt Angle. Then Ronda comes out. It's all happy, happy, smiley, smiley. And then as Ronda's about to sign the contract, Kurt and Triple H are talking, kind of, you know, having a disagreement in the corner. Ronda asks him what's wrong. And then he says that they're manipulating her and they just want to get back at her for what she did to them at WrestleMania 31. Well, he said 21 at first, but, you know, it's Kurt Angle. You can't get it all right. Yeah. And then came just this glorious piece of bonkers stuff where, like, they're trying to say Kurt's got the flu and that he doesn't know what he's talking about. And then Kurt's like, weren't you backstage just saying that, you know, now you own the bitch? And, you know, the fans are going crazy about it. And then Ronda, Triple H takes Kurt Angle away. And then Kurt Angle gets the mic one more time and says, well, you know, you were the one, weren't you the one, Stephanie, that says that Ronda's a has-been, even you could take her? To which Ronda just turns on the desk there. Triple H tries to get involved. And then Ronda belly-to-bellies him through a table. Then Stephanie slaps her. Then she gives her the desk there. And Stephanie runs away. And the whole thing has been a big catastrophe for the McMahons. Stephanie goes on Raw Talk and she says, you know, we need to get back to basics. We need to get this all sorted out. Tomorrow night we're going to make everything right. And then on Raw, Stephanie and Triple H are in the ring ready to speak to Kurt. And then Ronda comes out like she's about to murder them. But then Kurt comes out and says, look, I got it wrong. You know, I really need this job. So, you know, just you know, sign the contract. It'll be fine. And then Triple H sucker punches.
Wasn't that the funniest thing when he did the sucker punch? Kurt's just stood there with his completely gormless expression on his face.
Ronda also did have a great line where she basically made Stephanie apologize to her because if she didn't, she was going to rip her arm off. So, I'm giving all that as the backstory to you.
You did a good job there, Kenny. You did a good job there getting it all in order.
So, yeah, that's all the order of the stuff that happened. We've got two nights in. Break down for me the storyline, the performances by all four people, the pros, the cons. What is your opinion?
What is my opinion of this? Well, when the fans were chanting Ronda Rousey Elimination Chamber, she looked close to tears. She looked really moved by it, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Saying that, you know, she wanted to make Roddy Piper's family proud and to earn the fans' respect. So, you know, that was... I enjoyed that part of it. And she's, you know, setting out a stall and saying, this is who I am, you know, this is why I'm here. I don't want to, you know, the red carpet treatment, even though that everyone knows that's what she's going to get. So she's saying, you know, I'm just one of the girls and I'm here to do what everyone else does. So I thought that was a good start to her character. I felt like maybe when she was, as you say, when she was giving Stephanie the death stare, it's almost like you could sort of almost see her turning green and turning into a Hulk. You know, she was so angry, wasn't she? When she's getting mad. So maybe she just needs to tone that down a little bit. You know, it was so serious, it was almost descending into comedy. But I did enjoy her performance. In a sense, you know, you can see that she is taking it seriously and she really wants this thing to work. I thought Triple H's bump through the table at Elimination Chamber was hilarious. And that just amused me so much, especially afterwards.
He wouldn't put over Booker T for the world title, but he'll flip around for Ronda Rousey like nobody's business.
I don't know. That really just cracked me up, especially afterwards. He's like selling it because so seldom does anyone sell anything for more than about 10 seconds in this company. So it was quite funny watching Triple H really do the sell. That was kind of a bit Laurel and Hardy, I guess, at times. But, you know, it amused me anyway. So I felt that she did a good job. Ronda did a good job. I thought Stephanie was good as well. She doesn't really get that much praise in these circumstances normally. I thought she did a really good job there. Came in, gave her the good slap across the face. And then when Ronda gave her the, you know, I'm about to turn green stare, Stephanie went into full retreat mode, you know, and she gave her the respect that she obviously wouldn't give any other female character on the roster. So that really, I felt, distinguished Ronda from everyone else, for better or for worse, obviously for better in her case. But some people would say, well, why is Stephanie not doing that for other people? And I'm absolutely in agreement with you. Why isn't she? At least she's doing it for one of the acts. So I enjoyed Stephanie's performance as well. I thought she did well. I thought it was a good start. I mean, there were moments when it was kind of threatening to fall apart, especially when Kurt was doing the promo. And as you say, mentioned WrestleMania 21. You never really know what Kurt's going to say. And I think they should really minimize the amount of language that they ask him to memorize each week to increase his chances of getting it right. This is, of course, from the person that couldn't remember that Mr. T went into the Hall of Fame in 2014.
Let it go, friend. Let it go.
But no, I thought it was well done. I mean, there were moments there where it was kind of threatening to fall apart, and it kind of looked a bit sort of cheesy, especially when Triple H and Kurt Angle were having this sort of secret meeting, and Ronda's there, well, is everything all right? And it was kind of almost descending into sort of, you know, mediocre acting territory, but I felt they really pulled it together, and I thought the ending was really strong. I didn't think the Raw angle was as good, mostly because of Triple H's sucker punch to Angle. I thought it looked so ridiculous, but I felt that the Chamber was a really good start to it, and I think that's what people will remember more than the Raw angle. And I think people won't really dwell on what happened on Monday. They're more now looking forward to what happens next. So I think overall, on balance, I was impressed. What did you think, Kenny?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on something for a rare occasion. I actually thought the Raw angle was just as strong as the night before. I really enjoyed it. I thought that she... Because the thing about the thing on Raw is that she seemed to be more comfortable than she was the night before. I think the first night... You know, she's not got that cadence yet where she can allow fan chants to get in and then pause and all that kind of stuff. But I think the thing with the Triple H punch at the end was it made all the sense in the world because, you know, Kurt Angle basically almost ruined their big, you know, I think Stephanie talked about it on Raw, you know, this is our biggest thing we've ever done as executives. We've managed to get this champion of UFC to WWE when obviously behind closed doors you can tell they are smug arseholes about it. And yeah. Kurt Angle just outed the whole thing. Yeah. And because Ronda is, you know, so looks up to Kurt as much, she's going to kind of do whatever Kurt says. And I mean, I do think that, to your point, though, Kurt Angle's expression pre-punch, as if he's waiting for a bus, was the best thing I've ever seen. It's so bad, it's good.
I don't object to the punch. Yeah, I mean, no, I don't object to that at all. I just thought that it was just like a bit of a clown show. I mean, Triple H might as well have produced a custard pie and slammed it in Kurt's face.
that's pretty much. But I think that, I mean, Kurt Angle's kind of at the moment this kind of goofy joke guy. You know, that's kind of what he is. And I feel like if the best chance for him to find his balls and to be, you know, a little bit of the old Kurt Angle would be with Ronda Rousey, because this is, you know, who would have ever thought Kurt Angle would get one more match with this level of interest? You know,
yes,
he had Kurt Angle's kind of lucked out because he had the Shield thing that he was a part of, which, you know, was turned out really well for him because he didn't have to do a lot, and now he's going to be in this big tag team match at WrestleMania, and I think the pressure's going to be on him because people are going to him and Hunter are going to have to carry a lot of the match.
Yeah, they are, because, I mean, I still don't understand how Stephanie versus Ronda works, you know? I mean, we've established the beef between them now. We understand, you know, why they will be having a match.
Well, isn't it just going to... It's going to kind of be like Austin Vince, right? It's going to be, you know... I mean, I can't imagine Steph... Because everybody has different examples, but for me, one of the top five spots in wrestling that I have ever seen... that I thought were so ridiculous and unbelievable was Michael Cole trying to do offense to Jerry Lawler at WrestleMania. And he's trying to beat him up and he's trying to injure his leg, but he doesn't know what he's doing. So he can hurt, you know, it just looks terrible. And Jerry Lawler's having to sell it. So I think with Stephanie, she can definitely get a one up on Ronda, but I don't want to see like Stephanie doing arm bars to Ronda Rousey and all that kind of stuff. But,
yeah. Well, with Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, that was just a stupid throwaway match. That was, no one was meant to take that seriously.
It was presented as the second biggest match of the fucking show. They got all the TV time. But the problem was, to your point, is that when you build all that up, what are you going to do? Because it's essentially Jerry Lawler killing an announcer. But then they thought too much about it and ended up trying to give Michael Cole offense, which was just the worst idea ever. But you know, to give Stephanie credit, I mean, she's not bad. I mean, when she had that match with Brie Bella at SummerSlam, you know, she can do the basics. So
She certainly can. Yeah, I'm sure they'll be going through it, you know, exhaustively over and over to make sure they're all happy with it before the match is put in the ring. The problem is, of course, because the men are just going to be wrestling each other, and, you know, the women are just going to be competing against each other. That kind of makes it more difficult as well. I think with this, with the Cole versus Lawler thing, Steve Austin was the referee, wasn't he? That was part of it, part of the reason why it was given so much TV time as well, wasn't
it?
So there was that as well. So that was more of a silly thing. But this is presented, you know, despite Kurt Angle's expression and the, you know, the ludicrous punch at the end of Raw, this is supposed to be like a serious, it's supposed to be serious business. And when this is over, presumably Angle and Ronda Rousey will win. Then Ronda's established as a top contender for the title. Presumably she faces Asuka, maybe at SummerSlam or down the road at least anyway. So this can't be a clown show. They can't be in there throwing custard pies, you know, and we can't have a special referee drinking beer. You know, it's going to have to be a serious sort of presentation. So I'm not quite sure how they're going to make that work with Stephanie and Ronda. But as you say, mostly maybe the match is going to be 80% or even 90% Triple H versus Kurt. And we'll just have the finish with Ronda squeezing the submission out of Stephanie. So maybe they'll just limit it to that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the kind of tagline is going to be the Olympians versus the McMahons kind of thing. Which, do you know what? To give it credit, I was skeptical before, but I actually think they've done a really good job with it. So,
yeah, I agree. I think they've done a really good job on the hype. I think they'll do a really good job between now and WrestleMania as well.
You know, the only things that could let it down is, you know, Kurt Angle, I thought, looked pretty bad at Survivor Series.
Yes, he was struggling. I mean, his legs looked tight. He just did not look mobile. He just looked really, kind of reminded me, not quite as bad, but kind of reminded me of Kenta Kobashi towards the end there. Just a guy who was really falling apart and shouldn't have really been in the ring.
Yeah, so, I mean, hopefully Kurt can kind of get, I mean, but then he did have to, he did do a few matches at that point. So maybe it was just kind of too much too soon. The other thing is that Triple H does have a tendency. The thing about Triple H is that's, you know, weird is that he is really good, but he always wants his matches to go really long.
He does, you're right.
And, you know, that Seth Rollins match last year was just, whew, I mean, that needed 10 minutes off it as quick as possible. So I think with this whole thing should be like 20 minutes. Entrances, match for 15 minutes. Do not do 30 minutes here, because the last thing you need is 10 minutes of Kurt Angle and Triple H doing rest holds to build to the point where Ronda gets in. Make it sort of snappy, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And Triple H as well, I mean, the guy is so enormous. I mean, he's just so much bigger than anyone else. I mean, it was just amazing how much larger he is than Kurt Angle. So, I mean, that could be a hindrance as well. You know, maybe he could lose some weight for the match, Kenny. Something tells me he won't lose any weight for the match. You know, but maybe he could. That would probably improve his performance. You know, so I'm not suggesting, I'm not casting any aspersions at the moment, but I just think that if Triple H, I mean, he's the same age as me, he's just a few months older than me. I think if he was about 25 pounds lighter, he'd be able to do more in the ring and he'd be able to do it smoother and with more dexterity than he can right now with all that muscle. Not that I'm casting any aspersions, Kenny.
Now, Finn, wait a second here. I mean, I hope you're not trying to imply here that Triple H is putting sauce on his chips. At all. Triple H is not on the sauce. Tomato, barbecue, none of it. Anyway.
I agree, Kenny. Wholeheartedly.
Wholeheartedly. Now, we're going to talk about a ton of stuff on the Overrun this week, including John Cena. We're going to put him on the Overrun because he's free agent and goes to SmackDown and does all that kind of stuff. But the last thing I want to talk to you about here on the main show is the Roman Reigns promo on Raw about Brock Lesnar. It was supposed to be a face-off and Lesnar's not there, but he was in Vegas the day before when the Chamber was on, meeting with Dana White. It all feels a bit like a, you know, Lesnar's making his power plays that he makes before a contract's up, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, the whole angle on Monday to me had Paul Heyman written all over it. What did you think?
Yeah, it all feels very transparent to me. It's like we've been here before 3 years ago. Yeah, Roman Reigns was out there. I mean, he cut a ferocious promo. I thought he did a really good job there. You could believe that he believed what he was saying. Believe that. So, I mean, I really felt like it was a good promo. If anyone thought that that was a shoot or unscripted, then why would you think that? I mean, as if something like that is going to happen on Raw, especially from a guy at the level of Roman Reigns, it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen anyway. So I thought he did a good job on the promo. It was kind of similar to what he said about Cena, wasn't it? During their feud back in September, it would have been, wouldn't it? No Mercy. September, yeah, yeah, yeah. Was No Mercy September? September, October. When they were doing the promos there, and they showed that footage of John Cena knocking The Rock for being a part-timer, and Cena saying, well, I'm here every week. And then Cena wasn't there, and Reigns is like knocking him for it and calling him a hypocrite. So it kind of felt a bit like that. And Reigns is out there saying, you know, this isn't about the money. You know, I respect this business. I was born in this business. I'm not this guy that's just in it for himself. And he did get quite a lot of cheers. And it felt like, as I said earlier, the whole machine right now, you can see the whole plan is to try to steer the audience in the right direction, in the Vince direction, to Vince's way of thinking, Kenny, so that they like Roman Reigns. So by presenting Brock as this evil, money-grabbing guy who doesn't care about WWE or its fans, and he's just now going to be using WWE to try and increase his market value with UFC, that's the whole plan now. And no doubt that's what Brock Lesnar is doing, because he's done it before and he's all about the money. But there again, Kenny, you know, he's never tried to pretend that he's anything else. He's all business. He's all about the money. That's why he's there. So.
And we've also got to put out there, just because it is relevant to the story, is that, you know, John Jones has just had his trial thing for failing the drug tests again. And I think he's out a minimum of a year. And, right. and that was the fight, really, wasn't it? That was the kind of UFC fans or whatever, they wanted to see. There was big money in John Jones and Brock Lesnar. But where Brock Lesnar's really clever is that UFC needs stars right now. They really do. Because I'm like a casual UFC viewer. I'm the worst kind of UFC fan. I'm like, oh, is there a big fight on with lots of buzz? I'll watch that. And the last UFC fight that I watched was probably McGregor's last one, which is a long time ago. So, and I think there are people, obviously you're not catering the whole thing to me, but UFC, a lot of times when it's done right, does bring in outside fans. You know, whether it's a Ronda Rousey fight or a Conor McGregor fight. And I think Brock sees that value in himself. And if he doesn't do it now, he's never going to get to do it. So I get what he's doing. I thought the promo on Raw from Roman was great. It might be Roman's best promo. I don't know. I'm trying to see if there's any ones I think are better than it. But it was clever because they did a realistic style thing, but it wasn't too insidery that people would wonder what's going on.
Right, yeah. I mean, he called him an entitled piece of crap who hides behind his contract. Reigns said he neither respected nor feared Brock Lesnar, and said that I actually care and respect this place. And then we had the bitch comment, which is, you know, always like, you know, the big, oh, let's save that one for last for the big, big pop, and people will think it's real. You know, the only thing missing was, this is a shoot, brother. he should have tacked that on the end. Like Hulk Hogan back in the day. So,
do you think that, I mean, it is a clever way to try and get people to cheer Roman, I guess. I mean, there was reports in the arena that he was booed later on in a dark match, so I guess it's, you know, not going to work all the time, but, I mean, it's an interesting angle to try and take and into Mania.
Well, I mean, it is, yeah. I mean, it's one based on realism that people can understand. Enough fans know that what Reigns said is true. And 3 years ago, Lesnar played this game, and I think he signed a new contract. Was it maybe about 6 or 7 days before the show?
Yeah, because he went on. Did he? I'm sure he went on like ESPN that week.
Maybe it was Tuesday before the pay-per-view. He announced that he signed a contract or something.
Yeah, because he did that whole thing about, you know, I'm an entertainer now and all that kind of stuff. You're like, Brock Lesnar's an entertainer? Like, it was just so funny to hear those words from you. Like, they must be giving you the best schedule with the best money. Like, he got a raise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that's it. I mean, this is what happened back in the 90s, wasn't it? You know, with WWF and WCW, you had like a bidding war. You had guys whose market value was elevated by a buoyant market with two companies that were willing to pay. And that was the great thing about the wrestling war for the talent. We don't really have that now, where we don't have it at all, because Impact Wrestling is obviously no challenger to WWE. But for your Lesnar's, he's got the UFC option still. So he can use that to bargain with WWE and to try and get the best deal for himself. You know, he's all about the money, and you can resent him for it, but at least he's honest about it. You know, there's a lot of people in wrestling that are about the money, but pretend they're not. So at least he's honest about the fact that he's, you know, he's a mercenary. So,
but you know, I'd never seen this match before fully through. I'd seen bits and pieces of it, but on Sunday I was over at my friend Ollie's house, and you met Ollie, and sure. We decided to stick on the 1994 Bash at the Beach main event with Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair.
All right,
and, you know, Hogan's put on that. You know, Hogan's, you know, signed this new contract. But Hogan absolutely earned his money that night. You know, he brought in all this, you know, he brought it, you get Shaquille O'Neal there, Mr. T.
Mr. T.
In 1994, not 1993, I'm kidding. But like, so Hogan really put a lot into that match. There's a point where he does like a reverse armbar thing, which, you know, you never see from him. But I guess the point is, they were paying him so much money, and it seemed at points like it was benefiting the company to have him there and to have him part of the show. I mean, it did go downhill for a little bit before the NWO, but what I'm saying is, Hogan paying him all that money, I think there was an absolute, you know, you could see where you're making the money. But in the network era, I don't know if Brock Lesnar really makes you enough money to be giving him $4 million.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's got to the point now where, you know, the brand is the star rather than the stars. You know, some people might argue and say, well, if that's the case, how come SmackDown is struggling to sell tickets many weeks? And that is a, you know, SmackDown tapings are struggling to fill the venue each week. And that is a fair comment. But there could be other reasons for that. You know, that you look at Brock Lesnar, and is he a guy that is really moving the needle? Is he really earning his crust? Is he really earning that paycheck, that massive salary. And that's a tough one, because you only would really know if he left, and if, like a lot of people, unsubscribed from the WWE network. At that point, then you know that he actually was worth the money. So it's a tricky one, really. And I know WWE likes having Lesnar there, because when he's on a show, the show does feel bigger. You know, when he's part of a match, it does feel big. Obviously, it was the Braun Strowman debacle, and No Mercy last year being the obvious exception. But usually when Brock's there, he does bring a bit, you know, big match aura. So maybe they feel he's worth it for that, because they can, you know, especially this year when we're going to single brand pay-per-views, maybe it'd be like, well, we need him more than ever to make SummerSlam and Survivor Series and Royal Rumble and WrestleMania feel like bigger shows, because we've accumulated the brands, or maybe they need him less because they've accumulated the talent. It's a tricky one, Kenny, because, you know, you look at the build to WrestleMania, and once again, we're in that situation where it's the part-timers who are getting the lion's share of the TV time. So, how are they going to be after WrestleMania? Do they need Brock Lesnar for events over the summer, or are they going to be able to get away without him? Are they not going to need him because they've got enough talent? It's really tricky to know what to do for the best. And it's not until he goes that WWE is going to know for sure if he's worth the cash. You know, there's arguments for and against re-signing Lesnar. I personally believe they'll re-sign him. Because I think Vince sees him as a major attraction and wants him on the team. And there's enough money in the kitty that they can afford him.
And don't get me wrong, I'm a Lesnar fan. So I want him to stay if it was up to me. But yeah, it'll be, and I think the thing is, if he stays, I don't know what stories you tell with him. Because I don't know what's... there's nothing where I'm going, oh, that's the match. You know?
That's the problem with them not building, like I was just saying there, is we're coming up to WrestleMania and it's the part-timer season again. It's not like we've got these big stars coming up through the ranks that could potentially face Brock Lesnar. I mean, obviously it's Lashley. Most people are expecting him to arrive shortly. They can do something with Lashley and Lesnar. But again, that's another part-timer. Can't believe that Lashley at his age and with his level of wealth is going to come in and go on the road to 180 days a year. I just can't see him doing that. So I would think he'll come in on a preferential, get the preferential treatment on the big contract as well. So you could do Lashley Lesnar, but in many ways that just accentuates the problem of the, you know, youngsters not gradually moving up the ranks and becoming big stars, which is, you know, a problem WWE has had for most of this decade due to its reliance on the part-timers. It's a real vicious circle. And it's like, very much like what WCW ended up suffering from in the late 90s. The difference is with WWE, they kind of, they've made it work, whereas WCW didn't. But you're right. Yeah. Who on the card, which regulars do people want to see face Brock Lesnar in big matches, or which regulars would be treated as worthy, contenders or candidates to face Lesnar in a big match?
Is Finn Balor finally going to get his fucking match that he's been going on about since he came back last year? That's the whole time. It's, yeah, I want to beat Brock Lesnar.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's, I mean, if they're doing the Lesnar turn, which presumably they're going to for the WrestleMania, I don't think they're going to do the full turn, but obviously they want Reigns getting getting cheered. He's going to get booed. They want him getting cheered at WrestleMania. I think we're both in agreement, Kenny, that Finn Balor's ticket to the top is a heel turn. So can they do Balor versus Lesnar? Heel versus heel? Maybe they can, you know.
Maybe they can. And the Rousey thing, it does feel like Rousey and Stephanie could have a Vince and Austin type of feud. And maybe that will, you know, you were talking earlier about, you know, Stephanie would never sell the way she did for Ronda for MDLs, but maybe the Ronda thing could benefit other people by, hopefully, if it becomes a bigger storyline, that maybe Stephanie has some women that work for her, there's some other women trying to get to Stephanie, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, it could be good for other women. I do think that Stephanie, the stuff she's done here, because, you know, we've given her a fair amount of, you know, flack, deservedly so at points, but I think this is probably the best thing that she's done since she came back as a heel about 4 years ago.
I would agree, yeah, absolutely. Because it's give and take, and because you can believe that Ronda Rousey is not going to be humiliated like everyone else has been.
Yeah, and I totally understand that there are people listening to this who can't stand the character and who do hold kind of grudges against her for people that she hasn't put over before. Because, I mean, what has Stephanie had as comeuppance since she returned? There have been, I would say, a handful of incidents. She got slapped by Brie Bella. She got arrested because of the thing. She got thrown into a mud pool by Vicky Guerrero.
Yeah, that's going way back. There was didn't Seth Rollins throw Triple H into her and Stephanie fall through a table?
There was that. Roman speared her at WrestleMania 32.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's done bits and pieces here and there, but there's never really been... It's almost like you need to wait every year, you need to have a full year of her annihilating everybody, and then... Like, I remember... I'm not saying this was a great storyline, because it is horrendous, but back in late 2001, Vince McMahon had the Kiss My Ass Club.
Yes.
And, you know, earlier on that year, he'd made Trish, you know, bark like a dog on TV, and he'd made JR get his... All that stuff happened in his hometown. But to Vince's credit, he came out at the end of that year and The Rock got Trish and JR and all that to come out and all point and laugh at Vince as they all made Vince kiss Rikishi's ass. So there was a comeuppance that also involved the people he had wronged as well. Yeah. Because that's the thing, if Stephanie like tears through six or seven people and then the eighth person is the one that actually does something to it, the six or seven people that she's went through have all still got that stank of not having had any, you know, retribution. So hopefully the Ronda thing does open doors for other people to be able to do stuff as well. I know that, if you've seen this, but WWE are talking to a company in Australia about doing a show in front of 100,000 people in October.
Right.
And one of the headline parts of that is going to be Ronda Rousey, because I think she did a fight with Holly Holm in Australia, and it did like monster numbers. It did like 56,000 people.
Wow.
So, you know, Ronda's
I think I remember watching that fight.
Yeah, so I think she has a commodity there, and that's going to be kind of, I guess we'll see where that goes. Will it still be? Yeah, so it was the Melbourne Herald Sun newspaper reported that WWE's in talks to run the 100,000 seat MCG in Melbourne in October, and the story pushed that it was the return to the city of Ronda Rousey, who drew 56,214 fans for a fight with Holly Holm. So I guess we'll see. And then
definitely. I mean, I guess the thing with Ronda and Stephanie is it sort of would have been better if the Stephanie match was at the end of the story rather mm-hmm. than at the start. But I mean, as long as she puts her over, and she's going to, who, you know, beggars can't be choosers. Let's face it, Kenny. You know, we'll be happy with that, won't we?
Yeah. And one of the things that's going to intrigue me the most is, you know, we've got WrestleMania, and, you know, you kind of know what's going to happen. You know, WrestleMania, Ronda gets her hands on Stephanie. But what happens the night after WrestleMania? Where does Ronda Rousey go after that? That's going to be... Because I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, maybe she'll just disappear off on a vacation or something like that. You would think that Asuka's winning the belt from Alexa Bliss. Presumably Alexa will get a rematch. I mean, I'm not quite sure how Ronda fits into that. I can't see her being there every week. I mean, we talked about this back in when after Royal Rumble, that it made no sense for her or WWE for her to be there every week. So I imagine they've got it mapped out what they're going to do with her, because they'll be paying her so much money. And she's going to have got herself a sweet deal. She's going to want to know, I'm sure before she signed, she would want to know what she was going to be doing. Like with Brock Lesnar, for instance, all his programs are laid out well in advance, so he knows what's going to happen. And I think, believe he has to agree to it before it happens. So I imagine that Ronda has got a similar type of deal. But yeah, she maybe she'll be there the following night, maybe she won't. I don't think that's really that important. I think it's more the WrestleMania match is a success. That's obviously crucial. I'm hoping it will be. As you say, Kenny, if he can keep it short, if he can resist the urge to fill up like half an hour of pay-per-view time with the match, if they can keep the match to 15 minutes or less, I think they're on to a winner. And they've set her up nicely. I think people will pop huge, Kenny, for Ronda forcing Stephanie to submit. It'll be like this great release. What it'd be like, this huge yes, yes, yes moment, you know?
That's the moment everybody wants, so yes. I'm sure we'll get it. But anyway, we've got a ton more to talk about. We're going to head over to the Overrun now. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. At the $4 level, you can get that, where we'll be talking about John Cena, SmackDown, WrestleMania, a couple other things from Raw. And of course, I'm going to leave you with this tease. I am going to apologize to Finn Martin on the Overrun, because he was right. Jonathan Coachman is terrible. We will talk about that on the Overrun. Finn, where can people go if they want to get any of your great ebooks on Power Slam and your interviews, or just say hello?
Yeah, they can go to my website, which is finleymartin.co.uk, or they can follow me on Twitter at finleymartin or at powerslamonline. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985 on Twitter, Inside_the Ropes for the brand. You can go to insidetheropes.co.uk for tickets to Paul Heyman in New Orleans. We're over 3/4 of the way full with VIP, so do go and get that if you want to join us. And then there are limited standing tickets in Glasgow and London, I think, for Chris Jericho, which will sell out, so please do go and pick them up. And also head over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, where we have an exclusive interview with Rey Mysterio that I conducted a couple of weeks ago, where I asked him about what led to his full-time return, or what led to his return at the Royal Rumble, who was shocked backstage, what he thought about having to go out as number 30 when Daniel Bryan wasn't in the Royal Rumble. Tons of good stuff. And we'll have an interview going up later tonight with The Club that we had right before Raw 25. So that's all that. We will see you in the Overrun and see you next week. And take care in the weather, everybody, if you're in Scotland, because you never know when Bam Bam Bigelow's going to get you. Bye. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.